This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this morning, we will be covering season 3, episode 6, titled Scavengers. But before we get started, we just have one little thing about last week's / yesterday's episode, season 3, episode 5, titled Die Trying. So let's just open hailing frequencies for a sec and just say last week's episode, that was my fault in a way. We run into the last week's episode was long, but the major issue, like I say, if I can't get the episode out by a certain time, a certain day in a certain time, it causes like a cascade or a domino effect. And last week, that cascade happened to me. So we've got some stuff going on at home right now, and that affected my ability to get any editing done. And the longer it goes, the worse it gets. And this also affected when we recorded this week, because I barely just got through watching stuff. And then when we went to record on Friday night, like we normally do, all my audio was all screwed up. So we had to abandon it and record Saturday morning instead. And anyway, so it just, hopefully I will catch up this week. But I know some of you were concerned. I mean, everything is okay. Everything is okay with Ruthie and has been. That's why the last episode was late. So it's my fault, but, it's just one of those things. I didn't have the ability to edit. So, you know, if I'm not in front of the computer, I can't edit. So anyway, that's my issue. And it was a pretty long one, as you guys know. But anyway, we did get one little comment that came in from Fred, and he said, sorry, LT, but LC is short for LT from NC. Just that you know, smiley face. Okay, so going into this week's episode, Season 3, Episode 6, titled Scavengers. It is written by Anne Coffell Saunders and directed by Doug Arniokoski. And the description from CBS.com is as follows. After receiving a message from Book, Burnham and Giorgio embark on a rogue mission to find him, leaving Saru to pick up the pieces with Admiral Vance. Meanwhile, Stamets forms an unexpected bond with Adira. And that's TVMA with language and violence. I don't think we got a star date, right? I think, did we get a Captain's Log supplemental at the beginning?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Definitely no star date. The air date, as they like to do, November 18th, but you know, on all the other time zones. It was November 19th. I'm not sure when it was released. I didn't get to watch it until Friday. So very unusual for me, but we already explained that. So runtime of exactly 49 minutes. So getting into ratings, Ruthie, how would you rate Scavengers?
It's so hard for me because there were parts of it that I really liked, but then there were other parts of it that I really didn't. So I think overall I liked it better than last week. So I'm going to go with 9 made you fall for him like a 2-year-old on the edge of a well.
I had a similar rating. I could say a lot of the same things were things that I really enjoyed about it. It was a great kind of like adventure. I don't like the precedent that we're putting Burnham in. I don't want to see her spinning out of Starfleet here. So I don't like the direction that they may be taking her character. So that's, I think, part of the problem. And yeah, I think that affects my overall rating on it. So I'm going to give it 9. I didn't love here.
Ha.
All right. So we have some listener ratings.
Comet Geek Kev says, I'm giving this episode 9.3 out of 10 exploding noggins. Poor guy. He probably thought he was home free.
Probably did.
I don't know if he thought that. I mean, he was getting shot at also, so.
Yeah, true.
I mean, that's like rock hard place.
Edwin from Arizona says 8.5, the things we do for love.
Jeff X-Force 11 says 8.5, Delta badges that do everything.
Pretty much. Although I'd be really impressed if it was also a replicator.
I know. Maybe you could make your request there and it pops out at whatever replicator is around. I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Wes from Minnesota says, this was another stellar episode, though it didn't really focus on Starfleet that much, which was okay. I give Scavengers 9.85 programmable matter consoles out of 10.
Jeff B. from Idaho says, I rate this one 8 exploding escaping prisoner heads. Best line from the episode out of many good ones, once again. Your emotional spectrum runs from cranky to homicidal.
Yeah. Aha. LT from NC says 8, or should I say LC?
LC says.
Yep. LT from NC says 8.5 out of 10. You had me at unsanctioned mission.
Yes. Mike from Arizona also labeled his feedback, you had me at unsanctioned mission. And he says, hi, Brian and Ruthie. I hope this is Ruthie's return show. You have been missed. And I look forward to hearing your review of the latest episode. I am giving this episode a 9.7 out of 10. Did you eat her rating? Thanks, Mike.
And as you know, no, last episode was Ruthie's return. Brian was just bad at getting it out. So anyway, Carol from Washington, D.C., gives it 8.75 unsanctioned missions.
That seems to be a thing.
Yeah, it seems to be a thing. All right, so now it's time for our yeses.
Yes! All right. The first one is from Comic Geek Kev, who says, retrofitted Discovery is pretty darn cool. I guess this means it never makes it back to its own time unless it gets retrofitted. I'm sure there must be a fancy word for that. Oh my gosh. Good to see Book again. I had hoped he'd be a weekly character, but we take what we are given. Agreed.
Mm.
I think people need to learn that about Jet Reno too. So
yeah,
you're going to have to take what you get. Because that's how Tig wants it.
Yep.
So be thankful. You get what you get and you don't get upset. All right.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on the previous episode, but the Star Trek the Pod director, there's one of the episodes that has an interview with Tig Notaro, and you'll get a whole explanation about why she is not a regular. They want her to be a regular. She just doesn't want to be a regular.
Yep.
She likes the being like a...
I do what I want.
Freelancer.
All right. The junk ship falling into the salvage station was great visually. This show is top-notch in effects all the time. Agreed.
Yep. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I agree with the top-notch effects. Book's reconfiguring ship is awesome. Another nod to the top-notch effects, I think. That was me saying that.
Yeah.
I don't think we knew it could do that, but obviously Burnham did. Pretty unique.
Yes, it is damn cool.
I think that we sort of, someone, maybe, I don't know. I can't keep track if they say things in the ready room. And so it seems like we should know it in the show or what. But I feel like I knew that it could do that already. But I guess maybe not.
There was a hint at it, but I don't think it was as well shown as it was in this episode.
Yeah, I think that they must have said something about it on the ready room.
Yeah.
Because I remember them talking about his ship being like that. So
yeah,
I wasn't surprised when it happened, but it was cool. All right, he goes on to say, Linus. Now, how about giving the guy a storyline of some kind? Yeah. You can tell it hurt Saru to have to bust Burnham. Doug Jones continues to be outstanding. I don't know if he'd be considered the male lead. He should be. But he deserves an Emmy for that, or supporting, or something. I'm glad Adira told Stamets about Gray. Not everything needs to be stretched out over multiple episodes. And it makes sense to tell him after what happened to Culber. Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily know what's going on with Gray. Obviously, they don't either, but it's kind of like, what are they doing here?
Yeah, I don't exactly understand that either. So I don't, you know, and they're like, she says, it's not a head injury or whatever she said.
Yeah.
So
just FYI, it's not a head injury. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a great beginning.
Yeah. All right. Wes from Minnesota is next. And he says, I want to credit Michelle Yeoh's performance in this episode. She brought her A game here and it shows. I think Giorgio is going through some demons right now. Demons that have been buried, but now resurfaced thanks to David Cronenberg's character last week. That was brilliant. I know CBS captioning said Sen, but was it Sun? Oh, I'm really intrigued by this. Also, her saying, salvage this, you son of a bitch, reminded me so much of Worf in First Contact. Assimilate this. Yes. This was Yeoh's best performance ever, I think, in the 3 years she's been in this series. I would agree with that. I mean, I think you know, there was less fighty and more acty on this one. So
It's hard for me, honestly, because I feel like she's always bringing it. So
yep.
I'm like, man, she's just always doing her A game. She's so great. I've loved her for so long.
Finally, I want to bring in Linus. Him popping up at awkward points was hilarious and got me chuckling. It was great, and I had to say yes to that because I just, every time he'd show up, it got funnier and funnier. And especially like when Stamets chastises him, like, don't do that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, popping into the turbo lift at the most inopportune time. Yeah. Anyway, I like how they're using his character.
Did not think it was that funny.
No. Oh, well.
It didn't. I mean, it definitely should have been funny. I just didn't find it as humorous as everyone else did, I guess. I don't know. But I'm glad that people enjoyed it, just not me. All right. Mike from Arizona, who had a lot of yeses, says, once again, we have some well-written comedic and tender scenes. Tech upgrades, finally! And you get a personal transporter, and you get a personal transporter! I wanted to jump in line myself! The new hull design looks good. I'm curious to see how the detached nacelles work and look while at warp. The integrated programmable matter is cool. I'm freaking excited to see how the new tech is going to fare in combat. I want to know how the detached nacelles are going to work too, because I mean, if something is detached from you, it doesn't go with you. So how do they move with it? I don't know. How does the programmable matter make them attached, but still attached?
Don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, I don't get this. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Did I mention the new badges? So cool. Grudge is back. Philippa and Michael back in the saddle again. Love them or hate them, they make a good team of infiltrators. So true. They were my favorite part of this episode. Seeing Adira take a risk and be vulnerable with Stamets was a touching moment. I really love how they are setting up that relationship to be an older brother, younger sister dynamic in which they are healing each other. Oh, that Linus. He's such a hoot. Tilly's youthful presentation, playtime with Grudge, and her wisdom encouraging Saru to report Michael's disobedience.
I thought that this was great. And one of the questions that I have coming up is, and we'll talk about it more when we get to that point, but who's going to be first officer now?
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering as well.
Yeah, and other than the fact that there'd be a lot of officers that would be pissed off if they did it, if he did it, Tilly seems to have the,
she doesn't have the rank to be first officer. I thought that
that's
too,
my point.
But
that's my
there's
point.
No way they could make it her. I think it's going to be somebody from the 32nd century.
No, that could be. That could be at Willa or something, or I don't know.
I don't know. Somebody.
Well, we'll see. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, the point I was going to make, just to finish off that thought, is I was very impressed by Tilly's reaction to this, because she is correct. Burnham put Saru into that position, and the only way that Saru could act was by divulging it to Vance, because if he doesn't, you know, it's going to affect the entire ship. So while he wants to kind of, you know, understand, he has to be upfront and just, you know, tell the truth and unfortunately rat out Burnham and not just, you know, take it as a personal matter. So I think that, you know, perhaps the points that Vance made at the end of the episode, where Vance said, well, you know, if you had told me about this, I might have thought that it was a worthwhile mission or whatever. That is a good point. But at the same time, he was right to say something. He should have mentioned the mission to Vance before Burnham left. So, anyway.
Well, since we're talking about this now,
okay,
under Tilly's thing, and I have more to say about that, I feel like I don't like what happened between Saru and Burnham. I don't understand why they didn't talk more in their initial debrief. It seems like a setup for failure, because he knows how important it is to her, but he doesn't offer her any alternatives. But she also doesn't ask for any alternatives. So this is a breakdown of communication between the two of them.
Yes.
And I don't know why. I guess I don't. It frustrates me that they did this, because I feel like their characters should have progressed more than that, based on everything that they've been through. So I don't understand why I don't know why they did this to these two characters. I kind of feel like Saru should have trusted Michael more in the first place and allowed her to take some kind of action so that she wouldn't have been put in the position of having to choose, I guess. I mean, that was my initial reaction after just watching it the first time. I mean, I understand that he's her commanding officer and whatever, but he talks about trust at the end of the episode. He didn't trust her at the beginning of the episode.
True.
So that's my issue with this. He's already not trusting her. And if he's feeling that way, then he shouldn't have made her his first officer. Because a captain is supposed to trust the first officer. And if the first officer comes to you and says, hey, I've got this really XYZ thing. So, but he's just like, sorry, we can't do that because the Admiral wants us to be on standby for this. Well, I'm sorry, but technically, the first officer is not necessary for that mission. Stamets is the only one who's necessary for that mission. Someone right. else could easily come in and take that spot and operate as the first officer if this is a fully functioning Starfleet ship. How many times did one of Riker. The main officers on the Next Generation go off on some other mission while
right.
the Enterprise continued to operate fully functionally yeah. with, you know, without any hiccups or anything like that. So to me, this is another issue is this is a micromanagement because when Saru goes to tell, it feels like he's tattling. I'm like, doesn't he have authority over his ship and his crew? So he yeah. is not performing properly as a captain. And so when mm-hmm. instead of him informing the Admiral what's going on, it feels like he's tattling on Burnham and it makes him come across as unable to handle his crew by doing so. Like, I understand the need to yeah. say something because it paints the crew with the same brush. I'm not disputing that. My problem is how it's setting up this new Federation with, like, the Admiral has to micromanage everything. There's no way he can do that.
Right.
And I feel like he kind of expresses that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is a failure with the Discovery crew trying to fit in the new timeline or what, but it was
yeah.
very frustrating to me because I'm like, at the very opening scene, just it put me off for almost the whole rest of the episode mm-hmm. when I'm like, why didn't they talk more? Why didn't Saru offer her some kind of alternative?
Yeah.
I mean, he knows this is important. She's been here for a year working on this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just kind of wrote off all those Federation type scenes because I was like, you just, I don't know what you're doing, but you're screwing up big time. So it,
yeah,
it really, really irritated me. And that's why.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said there. When you look at it, I think Saru should have presented it to Vance, and that was his biggest mistake, and that kind of set up everything else that happened after. But I also agree with you that there should have been more dialogue, and Burnham shouldn't have just, like, you know.
Yeah, her attitude is, I'm going to go off and I'm going to do it anyway. That's her attitude.
The hell with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not right either.
No.
So I'm not saying that she was right. I'm just saying, I just don't understand. I mean, like, I don't know. It just frustrated me. I'm like, yeah. I understand that he's new being captain and she's new being first officer. But honestly, I'm like, was this a mistake making her first officer? It kind of seems like it. And
it, yeah.
I feel like he just kind of did it because I don't know. I'm like, I feel like this was a mistake for Saru making her first officer. I kind of felt it at the time because she clearly didn't want to be captain. And if she clearly didn't want to be captain and she expressed reservations about being first officer, then why would he think that she would just jump right into being first officer?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was feeling really good about Saru being captain, but now I'm kind of like,
Well, and, you know, these are some of the things that, you know, some people expressed early on in the season about Saru and how, you know, he's still learning how to be captain. And I think he's expecting Burnham to be a certain way, be the way that she used to be. And clearly she's not the way that she used to be. So,
right. Because she has, I mean, I just think he's completely disregarding the fact that she's been there for a year before they got there.
Well,
like and not only that, but completely on her own. Like when someone has been on their own for that long, and granted, a year isn't 5 years or whatever, but it's still a significant amount of time to start, you know, following your own direction and get out of habit of following someone else's direction.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was disappointed in this setup for this episode.
Yeah.
However, I did like the Philippa Michael show.
Yeah. All right. Let's continue.
A new development with Philippa and having flashbacks to the death of someone important to her. The fact that they are so severe is very curious. Seems to be more than your garden variety flashbacks. It was also wonderful seeing the return of her devious, manipulative, commanding, thrive in chaos, all wrapped up in an I'll do anything for Michael kind of love side. Say that 47 times fast.
Yeah, it's something that Wes mentioned on in his, where was it Sun?
Mm-hmm.
I think it obviously was Sun, and it is nothing that we've seen, but there was, and it's never been directly addressed from Emperor Georgiou, but there was this thing that was mentioned about Captain Georgiou, that she had experienced tragedy. And I guess we're actually seeing maybe, or at least the Mirror Universe's version of that tragedy, that it seems like maybe she lost her son. And somehow whatever happened with that Cronenberg character is bringing it back. I don't know, or something. Maybe it's the 500 years. There's no crossing between the two universes. I don't know, something to that, or something, whatever. It's triggering this flashback, and like we see in this episode, it's been getting worse, and you know, passing out in the middle of a fight's probably not a good thing.
No, nope.
Probably.
Not at all.
Yeah, it's very interesting though, and I want to see where this is going. And you know, we've seen her so far, like, you know, she's of course special guest star, but she's been in every episode so far except the first one. So I'm loving how much we're getting of Michelle Yeoh so far this season. Hope it keeps up.
Yep.
That's all.
All right. Admiral Vance, he adeptly walks the line between knowing Starfleet's priorities and the need to maintain discipline while still willing to be influenced.
Yeah.
I agree. I feel like Admiral Vance was great. The other two, not so much.
Yeah, it's like we were saying, Saru, he needed to present what Burnham had to Vance and have, like, because maybe Vance would have said, you know, go on the mission, or would have, you know, had I don't know, but there would have been some version of the mission or something that clearly, like, he didn't even get a chance to offer anything because Saru didn't present it to him. And of course, you know, maybe he would have presented it to him had Burnham not just gone off and done something. You know,
I doubt it. Otherwise, he would have said, let's talk to Admiral Vance and see what he says, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But he just said,
no, he just shut her down.
Which to me, to my mind, shows a lack of trust. So I'm like, you haven't felt like that's a lie. You're lying to yourself when you say you haven't felt like this since the Shenzhou, because you obviously felt like that before she even left. I don't know. That's just my interpretation.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, Saru, he just had to make that difficult decision to demote Michael. He is so self-reflective. He continues to amaze me in his character development. Once again, stunning visual effects, including navigating the ship through the structures. Yeah. Bookship is cool.
Yeah, I'll say something more about that decision in my yeses. Jeff from Idaho, Jeff B., is next. He says, all the new tech, especially the new badges, I sincerely hope the developers at Apple, Google, and Microsoft watch this show. Amen to that.
No kidding. No
if you
kidding.
Think about it, all the advances that have happened because of the first two Star Trek series, it's amazing how this franchise seems to inspire designers. So I would love to start seeing, you know, holographic
well, there's a reason for that, you know. Events.
Yeah.
Because all the inventors are nerds and watch Star Trek.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Stamets's tenderness towards Adira. I love how this relationship is developing. They can give each other what they have been missing. He is the bomb.
He is the bomb.
Yeah.
But it seems like a weird phrase to have survived 1,000 years.
Yeah. this is, it is.
He's the bomb.com.
The bomb. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with this. I thought that was unexpected, but at the same time expected. So I was expecting, you know, based on some of the interviews and, you know, the virtual cons and whatnot that we've seen, this kind of relationship would develop between the two characters, but it's progressing in a way that I didn't expect. Like, Stamets is really relating to her in a way that I didn't expect him to. And I think one of the most unexpected scenes for me that I really enjoyed in this episode, and we haven't really talked about it very much, but the Culber Stamets scene near the end of the episode, I really enjoyed that. And we've had a couple of those kind of scenes in the past. I remember the first one, you know, where they're like brushing your teeth back in season one. But I really enjoyed the scene there with Kober and Stamets talking about Adira.
Yeah, me too.
It was good. Yeah.
I liked that one as well. I thought it was well
Tilly
done.
Tilly and Grudge. More, please. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That was, I love that too. Linus and his transportation issues. Yes, I agree. And lastly, Bookship is badass. Yes, it is.
Yep.
It is.
He is definitely the coolest of the cool. All righty. LT from NC says, the overall look and feel of the salvage planet. They did a good job at interweaving in some old ship designs, and we've always wondered where old ships go. It also was good to see that there is such a big market for scrap parts. The new Georgiou storyline. While I will make a few comments later about this, it does do a lot of setting the stage for later in the season. Tilly and Grudge. More breadcrumbs on the burn. At least it is starting to get a little more fleshed out, and they are not just letting it hang without dropping a few little answers each episode.
Yeah, it's we're starting to get something, you know, the fact that it didn't really happen all at once, that there's some like epicenter, some place where it, you know, started from, that to me indicates that someone or something did it. But I'm not exactly surprised by this. All right. Carol from Washington, D.C. says, the ship retrofit was a brilliant way to give us new fun technologies to geek out over while freeing the show from canon handcuffs. Yep.
Agreed. And finally, we have one little blurb from Edwin from Arizona who says, good rescue scene. Agreed. was a good rescue scene.
All right. What do you have for your yeses?
Putting on the new badges. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I also like Detmer being leery of the new tech at her console. It seems very Detmer.
Yeah. And I would also say, like, well, what, why do we have to change this? Because I, sometimes you change things just to change them, and
mm-hmm.
that's not always a good idea.
No.
And especially in a battle, like, you know, when you have to know your controls, I think if there's any confusion there that happens in that moment, I think that would not be a good thing. So hopefully these new interfaces don't slow them down any. And that would be my real concern there. So I think Detmer is justified in her reservations there. And of course, you know, she's got a little bit of PTSD, as we've talked to, and we saw a lot of technological stuff brought into the ship. We didn't see a lot of counseling in this episode. So,
yeah.
Do you have anything else?
Let me see. I said this previously, but I'll say it again. I have to say, I really, really like the Philippa Michael show. Like, that's a show I would watch.
Yep.
But.
Yep.
I don't like what it means, I guess.
Yep. Same reactions.
Let's see. I also like the Adira Stamets scenes. I thought they were just the right amount of the feels that you need.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yep. I think that's it. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I have one more thing. I know a lot of people don't, but I do like the Michael Book relationship.
Yeah, I do too. And this was talked about a little bit in the writing room as well. The reactions that each of them have when they lay their eyes upon each other, you know, at the salvage area. Like, you could just see, like, even if the two of them haven't addressed this together yet, or haven't fully realized it yet, the fact that she sees him there, you know, kind of working in servitude, and he sees her there, obviously making that, you know, sacrifice, as he called it, David Ajala called it in the ready room. I think there was an acknowledgement, at least on camera, between the two of them, of some kind of acknowledgement of feelings, and, you know, it eventually leading to them, you know, kissing it, you know, near the end of the episode, I think was all good. So, yeah. All right. For my yeses, and, you know, most of them have been mentioned, but, you know, I'm a cat person. I know, as you are, Ruthie. So I loved the entrance of Grudge in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, coming on screen, this big fuzzy cat.
Wow.
Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, I have my cat, Taz, has somewhat of a resemblance to Grudge. Like, we thought, we haven't had his DNA tested, but we thought he may have some Maine Coon in him. He's not as big, but he definitely does have some physical resemblance, at least a little bit, to Grudge. He's quite a bit smaller, but he's still a pretty big cat, and a very energetic one. he's a cutie. Yeah, the Giorgio stuff, which we talked about, it seemed like her child dying there in the one scene. We see, like, you know, like a mirror universe blade there, blood in her hands, you know, so, and obviously a younger Giorgio, in the scene. Anyway, so I'm really intrigued by that and want to see where that's going. we've talked about the whole Saru and Burnham thing. I want to go specific to that scene, not the stuff that led to it, which we definitely have our negative opinions on, but I really did love the scene itself, the acting of both Sonequa Martin-Green and Doug Jones in that scene, and the overall decision that he made in that scene. Like, he is put in a very difficult position. Like, I don't know who he's going to pick for his first officer, which we'll be talking about. And, but at the same time, and he still needs her, and he still, you know, wants her to serve. And I think another good thing about it is that we finally get a chief officer of something mentioned. So we now know that she is chief science officer. I guess she was probably first officer and chief science officer, but now she's chief science officer. So yay to getting someone finally named the chief something officer. But beyond that, I think that he did what he had to do. What other choice could he make? Like, he can't sweep what she did under the rug.
No.
So he was right in if you want to call this a demotion, I would call this a demotion. You know, so she's going to lose the gold.
It's a demotion, but it's not a loss of rank, I guess. She's still commander.
Right, right.
But it's a loss of position.
It's a loss of position. And I think that, I don't think he had a choice. And the funny thing is, Burnham also knows that he had to do this. Like, what she did.
She knew there would be consequences for her actions.
Yes. And that she agreed that it was the right thing to do. Like, he had to do what he did. And, you know, as crazy as it is, kind of, that she put him in that situation, she understands that it had to be done. And I don't know what this means for her. I don't want to see her spinning out. I don't like this idea that she's just going to quit Starfleet. I don't want to see this turn into the Michael Burnham show, you know, like, well, some would say that it is already that and have been saying that since season one, but you know what I mean? I don't want this to turn into like the Section 31 show becomes the Giorgio and Michael show, you know, the Giorgio and Burnham show. I don't want that to be the Giorgio and Burnham show. That could be the Giorgio and Burnham show, but I don't want that. I want Sonequa on that show. I want Sonequa on this show. And I want her to be first officer and maybe captain someday, you know, if that ever were to happen, maybe on the last episode or something. But anyway, I don't like what it did, but I liked how she was dealt with.
Yeah, I don't like the way that they're handling her character either. It feels like one step forward, two steps back. It honestly does. I mean, haven't we already been here before?
Yes.
It didn't lead to, you know, mutiny or anything, but just, I feel like, and I mean, haven't we already been here before in this season? I mean, didn't Saru just say to her, given your history, I would think, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, in editing last week's episode, Ruthie, you mentioned about Saru dealing with this, you know, what Burnham's been doing. And it seemed like he had dealt with it effectively, but clearly he hadn't, or he didn't, or that she is just not, didn't learn her lesson. And I don't think.
Well, maybe he's taking one step forward, two steps back as well. I don't know. Because, like I mentioned already, I just feel like they are not communicating the way that they should have been.
Right. She is just going on doing whatever the hell she wants and, you know, just not respecting the chain of command. And I don't like it too much. And I want to see some level of equilibrium return to the two of them. So that's what I have to say. So I think that's it. So let's move on to our no's. Wes from Minnesota says, Book and Michael. Really? This was so forced on. It really felt like a forced relationship story-wise, like Trip and T'Pol in Enterprise during its third season. No, just no. Split them up, please.
I have to disagree with that. It did not feel like Trip and T'Pol at all.
Yeah. I don't agree with you, Wes. I do like their scenes, and to me, they feel earned. So
I think they have chemistry, and I feel like when I don't like the comparison, because I feel like the Trip and T'Pol thing was, well, we have these two attractive people, so let's just put them in a relationship after the show's been on for X number of years and no longing glances or anything. It's just suddenly we're going to do this. Like, that feels like doing it just to do it. But mm-hmm. if they had maybe had some lead up to it, then I wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't have felt so forced. But to me, I'm like, they sparked from the minute they were on the show together. Like, the very first scene that they shared, they sparked. So mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know how you can think that feels forced, because it's like, other than the fact that you just don't want her to be in a relationship, which I can understand, but I don't think that there's anything wrong with characters being in relationships necessarily. So
mm-hmm.
that's what I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Comic Geek Kev says, Giorgio reverting back to being all cold with Burnham when she was offered help. I had hoped maybe this episode would bring them even closer. I think we'll see her rely on Michael later, and this is just a story beat, but still disappointing. They pulled a fast one with Gray. It looked like Stamets was looking right at him, and then it turns out he wasn't there. Cheeky devils. Still no Sahil, not even a hey there, seems rude. Yeah, I kind of have to agree with that. Poor guy. He's been waiting so long. Like, the Discovery couldn't pop over and say, hey, guess what?
Yeah. Although maybe they did.
But
we just didn't get to see it.
Okay. But maybe a mention. Hey, we touched base with that guy.
I think it would make him cry.
It probably would. But I still kind of feel like they should have at least said something about maybe. I mean, I understand. You know, at the beginning, Admiral Vance says, yes, no doubt I could use 10 of you. But maybe Admiral Vance has been in, what did they call it? Putting out
bubble?
Fires mode. What?
Oh, yeah. Triage.
Triage. Yeah. He's been in triage mode for so long that he doesn't remember what it's like to not be that way. I feel like mm-hmm. he could have taken a moment to maybe send the Discovery to XYZ different places and be like, hey, guess what? We're still here.
Yeah.
So on that, mm-hmm. and in that regard, I can see what you're saying about, yeah, it's, we should have at least had something from poor guy in all this time. It's like they completely forgot about him. I mean, maybe Burnham has been in contact with him for the whole year. She was in that sector, after all. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I don't know. Does seem rude. I agree, Comic Geek Kev. You are correct. All right. He goes on to say, why couldn't Linus get where he wanted to go? It was humorous, but made no sense. In fact, the whole personal transport thing makes no sense. How does it know where you want to go? And I have to agree with you about the Linus thing not really making any sense, which is why I think I found it annoying, because I was like, and I think honestly, it might be because of what they said in the Ready Room, which they explained the badges in the Ready Room, but not in the show, which I find irritating. Why didn't they explain this in the show? Like, why do I need to watch a secondary, a supplemental show to get all the information I need regarding a show? That's what irritates me.
I am flashbacking, if that's a word. I'm having a flashback to season 6 of The Walking Dead and Talking Dead.
Yep. They did that a lot there. Well, because mm-hmm. they said in the ready room, you can pull up a transporter directive. And if you double tap, it takes you home. So he's showing up in all these random places and then he double taps to get out. That's what irritated me. I was like, if all he wanted to do was go home, then why didn't he just double tap in the first place? That's what irritated me. It made no sense because I can't remember exactly what they said in the ready room, but they basically said that you can pull up a console, if you will, a little transporter console that says where you want to go. And then you like do a single tap to take you there, or you can do, I guess it's like in Google Maps when you have your home programmed into Google Maps and you all you have to do is be like, take me home. I guess it's the same type of thing for the transporter thing, which makes sense that you have a home base. Like that's where, you know, when I say, take me home, I want to go here. Makes perfect sense. Right. Well, why is he double tapping to go home every time? Shouldn't he like have a destination in mind or something when he sets off and then he just restarts back at home? I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me. I didn't like it.
Upon reflection of that, I now understand where you're coming from with that. So,
It was funny, but then it wasn't. Maybe it was funny the first time I watched it and I could see why it would be funny. But then after watching it the second time, and unfortunately, after learning about the transporter stuff from the ready room, I found it less humorous. So that's what I have to say about that.
All right. Yeah, I do get what you mean now that I hear what you mean. Jeff B. from Idaho, he's our last listener set of no's. He says, I did not care for Michael at all this episode. Her blatant disregard for orders again, then saying I'm sorry again, which is hollow since given a chance for a do-over, she'd do it again. Her need to save the day and solve the mystery of the burn when the Federation, such as it is, has survived over 100 years post-burn without her. I just don't get the chemistry between her and Book. I'm really starting to dislike this character, and it's ruining the show for me because she is the protagonist. That's interesting.
I'm going to talk you off this ledge a little bit because I don't think she said she was sorry, because I don't think she was.
Okay. Well, before you do that, I'm just going to say this. There's talk about her both on the ready room and just in general about this, like living a freer life and not having, you know, the weight of the galaxy on her shoulders. But what is she still doing? She still has the galaxy on her shoulders. And if anything, she's taking it all on herself, just doing it by disregarding orders, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't see any change in her in not trying to, you know, take everything on herself. She's still doing it, but in a way where she's not just doing it with, you know, the Discovery behind her back. She's just doing it on her own, just doing whatever the hell she thinks is necessary. And so I don't think that she has advanced at all in that category. So
anyway. Well, I think I said this before. I'll say it again. I feel like she's doing one step forward, two steps back, because she had advanced in that category, but then she spent an entire year by herself. And as I said, when you spend that much time just doing your own thing and suddenly having someone tell you what you can and can't do again, it's probably, to say the least, disconcerting. So, and like I said, I don't think she was sorry because she would do it again. So whether or not, you know, I don't know, however you feel about that, to me, that's different from always asking forgiveness instead of permission. She knows what she did was wrong and she's willing to pay the consequences for it. But no, she's not sorry.
Yeah, it's like she's sorry for hurting him.
Right.
But she's not sorry for what she did.
Right. So. And she would do it again.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Lastly, he says, no Jet Reno. Come on, man. And thank you, Jeff, for taking the James stance. Someone has to.
Someone had to be there to do it.
Trumpeting.
Bang that drum.
Where are you, James? Where'd you go? So.
Yeah, I agree. I miss her, too. But, you know, you got to respect her wishes. She doesn't want to have a full time gig. Can't make her. Just be thankful for what you have.
Yep. Okay, that is it for our listeners. I know we've already said a lot of our no's and our yeses, so do you have anything else?
I think it was illogical for Saru to confide in Tilly, especially about his first officer. I understand that Michael is her friend and that Michael knows, or that Tilly knows, probably knows Michael best, maybe. At least I hope that's what he's thinking, but I not only is it illogical, it's inappropriate for him to confide in Tilly about Michael. She's not, was she not barely a cadet on the first episode? I mean, on the first season?
She was a cadet.
So she's not even ranked yet, so far as we know.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know what her rank is. I just know that the only reason she was there is because of her strong science background and dealing with the spore drive, as far as I know, to the best of my recollection. She wants to be a captain someday, but... Yeah.
She is currently an ensign. She was made an ensign at the end of season one.
Okay, so she's an ensign.
Yeah.
And the captain, is talking to an ensign. While, yes, he's close to her, it just seems inappropriate for him to talk to her about personnel issues. And I didn't like it.
I understand your point. I think that he is consulting her outside of the chain of command, which is, you know, how I'm taking it. But yeah, I do understand your point.
Still, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, it would make more sense.
The way that they set up their relationship on the second episode is not one that, like, he's supposed to be, like, when you're a mentor to someone, you don't confide in them about problems that you're having with other people that you mentor, in a sense. I mean, as the captain, he's technically the mentor for everybody, or at least the lead. I mean, he's the leader, if not necessarily, like, strictly speaking, a mentor. So, I don't know. I didn't like it. I thought, no. This is not something that I don't know. And I can see what you're saying, but at the same time, like, I don't really feel like that was made clear enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, he didn't come to her in her quarters to talk to her about this. He came to her at her duty station. So to me, that's not really something that, like, if you're looking for advice from a person or whatever, someone that you've talked to before about things, or someone who knows about someone, then you would maybe do that in the captain's ready room or in their quarters or in your quarters, but not at someone's duty station. That's where business is handled. That's what I think.
I have no comeback on this.
That's why I am upset with the Federation stuff, because I was like, no.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything else?
I didn't like the beard on Rin. That's it.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting take on that. Don't think I've ever seen an Andorian with a beard.
I haven't either, which is why I didn't like it. Like, to me, it seems like, so they all just shave all the time? And suddenly this guy has a beard? I don't know. I was like,
Maybe it was due to his...
lack of antenna.
Yeah.
I was joking.
Oh my goodness. I did not realize this. Okay, I have something to add to the about this episode. About that. So did not know this. I will tantalize the listeners by not saying what it is right now. So just to give a little hint on what's coming, there's something interesting about that actor. So, well, I have one thing that I have right now on my Hold Your Horses. I think I'm going to move it up to the nose. NCC 1031A. Okay. This is a mistake. We go way back to Star Trek and motion picture. The Enterprise was refitted, right? So, you know, they said retrofitted, whatever here, but it's the same ship. They just have changed a lot of it. It's not a new ship. So why is it the A? It shouldn't be the A. It should still be the 1031 refit, whatever. So to me, I found that annoying and confusing. And another nitpicky thing, but since we didn't get any feedback from anyone from the Northeast Ohio contingent, Cleveland and Akron, you guys, I will represent for you. Lieutenant Willa mispronounced the name of the USS Cuyahoga. She said something like Cuyahoga or something. And of course, that is the Cuyahoga. And of course, I saw this on the caption, so I know that's what it was supposed to be. If you don't know what Cuyahoga is, of course, the river that goes through Cleveland, and it is the county that Cleveland is in. So great for, you know, Cleveland area representation. Of course, we have Cleveland Booker, part of the show. So
Cuyahoga. Who's from Ohio around those writing rooms?
Yeah, I'm curious myself. There has to be someone on staff. You know what might be? Hold on. I think I know who it might be.
Well, while you're looking at that, I will say no offense meant to those Clevelanders, but is it possible that you guys are pronouncing Cuyahoga wrong?
No.
Okay. Just checking. There are a lot of words that Americans have stolen from Native Americans and pronounce it incorrectly. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. And I know that because I'm from Oklahoma.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not sure who it was. It's not who I thought it was. But I do remember someone. Nope. I was thinking, wait a minute. No, is it her? No, it can't be her. Okay. It's somebody. I'll figure it out. But I believe there is someone from the Cleveland area in that has something to do with this show. I just can't remember who. So anyway, that was it. I don't have anything else beyond. So let's move on to our Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
Mike from Arizona. He says, new tech, but no new uniforms?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, I wondered about this myself. Maybe they will change them out in season 4, but...
they should have changed them out now.
Yeah. Hard to believe that Toller of the salvage yard did not first demand to see their dilithium before allowing them to roam around, albeit mostly under guard. That seems awfully careless of him. Well, I don't think that they came forward saying that they had dilithium.
They did.
Oh, okay.
That's what she said to get him to let her land. Giorgio said, I've got all this dilithium.
Okay.
Jeff from Idaho. Is that Jeff B? Jeff B from Idaho, yes, says, Lieutenant Nilsen is third in command behind Michael. How did that happen? She barely had a line of dialogue last season. How is it not Detmer or Owo or Bryce? Seems weird.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with just inside baseball stuff. The fact that the actress that plays Lieutenant Nielsen was originally playing Arium in season 1. So there is kind of backhanded relationship to that. So it does seem like they are putting her in position to be the first officer, but it doesn't seem terribly earned, which also makes me think that it's not going to last very long. Because, you know, I made the point earlier about how it seems like Tilly had the sense of being able to act in that way. Of course, she can't be first officer. I agree with you totally, Ruthie. You know, like I said, it would piss off a lot of other officers.
Yeah.
If she kind of got advanced that far. But then again, you know, we've seen, we did see a precedent on this for Lower Decks where Mariner was made first officer, even though she was an ensign on that one episode. So
yeah, but I think that was because she had previously had that rank, or she had previously held a higher rank, and she actually got demoted in the actual rank demotion sense.
Right.
So the difference there is Tilly does not have the experience in rank, not just not rank.
Right.
She doesn't have the years behind her, so to speak, that Mariner did.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So I didn't have a problem with that on the Lower Decks.
Well, anyway.
All right. So I don't know. I understand what you're saying, Jeff. It is a little weird, but who else is it going to be? I mean, Detmer is the pilot. She can't be first officer. Owo is the whatever she is. So she can't be first officer. I don't even know what her position is. I can't recall right now.
Ops?
Yeah. Or yeah. Yeah. Sure. That's what she does. So, I mean, I suppose she could be promoted out of that to, I mean, Data had that position on the bridge, and he was third in command. So,
right.
I suppose you're right. I don't know.
I think Owo is lieutenant junior grader. At least she was. Maybe she's been promoted since, but I know she was a lieutenant junior grade, as is Bryce. I think Reese. And I'm not sure. I guess Reese is what? A tactical officer?
I don't know, but if you don't have enough ranked people to be the right ranks that you're looking for, then what do you do?
Well, and we have seen in the past, and this is one thing that I noticed, I don't think I've mentioned this on the show, but, you know, we had seen, say, for example, Commander Nan, who was on Enterprise before she moved over to Discovery. Mm-hmm. She had three pips. Who was the first officer? Number one. Number one has 2.5 pips. She is not a full commander, at least that we've seen, which makes no sense to me. So,
I don't know.
Weird. But we have seen several instances where first officer has been a lieutenant commander. Another one that I can think of right off the top of my head is Rafi Musiker being the first officer of Picard in Picard, you know, in the flashbacks. She was not a three pip. She was 2.5. So anyway,
I don't know,
but there's nobody. The only 2.5 pip I can think of would be Stamets and Culber, which I don't think either of those two would be first officer material.
It would need to be a bridge officer.
Right. So I'm thinking it's going to be Nielsen.
I don't know.
So we'll see.
I mean, it technically should be Owo if she has a higher rank than Nielsen, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nielsen did kind of come out of nowhere. Yes, she was on the show previously, but she kind of came out of nowhere as far as being on the ship is concerned for us. Those who are in the know that she was Arium, but it's kind of like,
Well, and yeah, and, you know, we'd seen some people ask this question this week. Like, who
is that girl? Yep, that's who she is.
Yep. And I think more people will ask that question next week if we find out that that's who Saru has named first officer. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Finally, Jeff's final no. He only had two. But his final note is those repair drones in the opening scene were a bit cheesy, like they were from WALL-E.
do better.
Did you notice that we had two different versions of the repair drones? I guess we had the .7s and we had the new and improved .8s or whatever they would call them in the 32nd century. So the 23rd century drones are almost as good as the 32nd century drones. There's another example of some inexplicable technology that just doesn't make sense that it would be able to do. Where are the exocomps? That's what I want to know. Of course, maybe they are exocomps or just more advanced, but
I don't know.
Yeah. But yes.
I don't know.
A simple question is next from Edwin from Arizona. And I know that you had some banter with him about such things. He says, did the other prisoners make it out?
And I said, the ones that were with them did.
And he says, thanks. Yeah, I was wondering that. I watched it twice. I didn't see where they went on the ship, I suppose.
And I said, yeah, that ship that left with Book's ship, you can see. Well, the second time I watched it, you could see them running straight for that ship.
Yeah.
And then you see that ship take off. So I sort of, while I did not directly see them get on the ship, when the ship left, I used my powers of deductive reasoning to presume that they got on that ship and that's where they left.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, there's this second ship that leaves with them that's kind of like,
transport ship is what they called it. So
what did they call it?
It just called it a transport ship.
Yeah. It kind of looked like a bug. That was what I noticed.
Yeah.
About it.
It was sort of squatty, I guess, a little bit more like roundish. Definitely was not sleek like Booker's ship, but. No.
And anyway, so we see it go off at the same time. So that was that. So yeah, they got off on that ship. Where that ship came in, I don't know. How that ship was available, I don't know. But
I think it was because remember how they said that the shift change, remember they were talking about the shift change?
Yeah.
Whatever minutes. I think that's the ship. And he said, they're going to take us up to whatever, wherever they're going, they're taking them there. And I'm pretty sure that ship is the ship that was going to take them there. They just sort of commandeered it.
Yeah.
That's my assumption anyway.
Makes sense to me.
So yeah, there you go. All right. Next we have some hold your horses from LT from NC who says, okay, I got more than a couple of questions about what's up with Philippa. Is this sudden spate of flashbacks due to her interview with Kravitch, or is this a side effect of being in the future? It just seems a little ham-fisted this episode. I see what you're saying. I don't know. I wonder those questions as well, and I have more than a couple of those questions too. All right. He says, I really wish that we'd get another random exposition dump on the Emerald Chain. I have lots of questions about our new villains, and they are taking their time for bean spilling. We're running out of episodes, and inquiring minds want to know. Doggone it, Michael. It was way too much like season one with Burnham does her own thing and gets in trouble with the boss. I get it. She had that year on her own, but I'm not really happy about revisiting the mutineer storyline, but it did serve the episode plot. But I have a growing feeling that this may get another redemption arc, and I'm not really sure we should go there again. I agree, as I have stated ad nauseum. I don't like this two steps forward, one step forward, two steps back thing that she seems to be stuck in a loop. Somebody needs to get her out of her loop. Oh, sorry. That's Westworld. All right. For something that is such a commodity now, they are slinging a lot of dilithium around. Agreed.
Yeah.
They certainly need to be a little bit more careful with it, I guess. Like a little bit more, I don't know, I guess careful, a little bit more.
Careful.
Cautious. Cautious is the word I was trying to think of. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, careful. Need to be more careful. All right. That's it for LC.
All right. Wes from Minnesota says, Saru removing Michael as his number one on the Discovery. It should have been more direct. Like, I understand why Saru was broken up about doing it, but it should have been a more adequate dressing down. Don't know what to say about this one. I guess you were looking for just like him just being more direct and just removing her. I don't know if that would have been more dramatically appropriate. So I'm going to not agree with you on this one, but I think I understand what you're saying there.
Yeah, I get it. I think though, based on their relationship, that the way it was handled was appropriate, I guess.
That is my take on it as well. Yeah. Now we have a comic geek Kev. He says, Burnham going against orders again. I'd rather not see this be a regular thing. Yes, her time alone changed her, but I would think her allegiance and respect for Saru would come first. I know what she did was right, but it would have been nice to see Saru be willing to go to bat for her with Vance. He's right to question his trust in her. There's a lot of stuff I could say about this particular one. I don't want to see this keep going like this, because like I said last week, I could see her, you know, and I think I even said it this week, I could see if this keeps going, her spinning out of Starfleet, and I don't like this. I don't want to see this anymore. So I'm really hoping that this is going to be the last time that she does something like this, or at least if she does it, that that Saru goes to bat for her, you know, like I don't want to see
what I was hoping for this episode, honestly.
Yeah,
I'm kind of hoping for Saru to go to bat for her, because again, doesn't he have autonomy over his own crew? Does he need to go to the Admiral for every little thing? Does the Admiral have to micromanage the fleet in such a way that wouldn't Saru be able to basically absolve her of this and say, well, yeah, I sent her on that mission because it seemed important? I mean, this is an entirely different episode if that happened. Michael's not going down the same path. Yeah, she made a mistake, but then Saru can look at her and say, I covered for you this time, but don't expect that to happen in the future because blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I felt like was missing, honestly. I don't think that what she did was right, but she knows what she did was wrong. So that's not a matter of, I mean, that's not really what the issue is here. Like, in instances in the past, I think that she kind of needed to be instructed. Like, for example, the very previous episode where he says to her, get our hands on, you know, parroting her words back to her. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's kind of not what we need to do, huh? So I feel like, and again, I think that he did give her a direct order not to go, but that was the wrong direct order. Why didn't they talk about it? I don't know.
Yeah. I definitely think that there were some mistakes that were made by both. And
honestly, to me, these feel like writing mistakes, not character errors.
I think I would disagree with you on that one. What we have seen in the past have been, you know, my favorite topic to talk about, how the plot is being advanced by the characters acting a certain way, maybe against character, versus the characters acting a certain way, which advances the plot. I think now, if we take what we've seen in the past, we would have this going on now. But now, based on what we've seen the last couple of episodes, her doing what she did, like just going out on her own, that seems completely in character to this Burnham that we're seeing right now. And we also see Saru not always making the right, like, overall decision or like consulting or, you know, whatever. So I could see him doing this too. So to me, this does feel like the character is advancing the plot. And certainly Giorgio would react the way that she reacts because she's Giorgio, and she would love to have any kind of, unsanctioned mission. So it in those ways, to me, it does feel appropriate for the characters. I just don't like the direction. So I'm hoping that it's going to change.
I understand what you're saying, and I think you're misunderstanding me. I think that the failing in writing is that they didn't talk more.
Okay.
Because I feel like, yes, the characters are acting within their setup parameters, but there are other failures in this script. And I think not having them talk more is a failure in writing.
I don't know. I tend to think them not talking more is also appropriate to the characters right now. And I think the next step is for them to learn and to talk more next time. So if they don't...
But will they, though? Because it doesn't seem like they're going to figure it out that that's what went wrong.
Your guess is as good as mine, but I really hope that they figure it out.
I mean, they used to talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't they talking now?
I'm just my own woman. I got to do my own thing. Sorry if anyone was offended by that one.
Oh, man.
Who's Saru's number one now? Nielsen?
No clue.
Don't know. It seems like she is the candidate being thrown out there, but I don't know. We'll have to see. It's difficult for me to come up with a Commander Reno. There you go. There's a three-pip. Boy, she would be quite the first officer. I could just see her being on there. But, you know, she's not up there enough. Mm-hmm. And we still don't know if she's chief engineer or not. So, anyway. I don't think that would work because of real life reasons, aka what we talked about, her not wanting to be a full time. So anyway, we'll see. While I do like the new discovery, and I know it makes sense, I kind of wish they left it as is. Kind of loses its uniqueness this way. I don't know, it still looks pretty much like the old one, for the most part. I don't know, I gotta spend more time looking at the Discovery and how it looks compared. I would like to see, I'm sure the Trek Yards guys, if they haven't done this yet, they're probably going to do a before and after YouTube of the two Discoveries. So, there were quite a bit of changes. I noticed different like patterns on the ship itself. But I really don't get the A, so I already said that.
Yep.
That seems like a canon inconsistency there. I do not get the function of the programmable matter on the instrument panels. Does it just mean they don't have to touch the panels, that it rises up to them instead? I know it was the same in Bookship. I didn't really get it then either.
I honestly didn't really get it either. I don't understand how it works or what it's supposed to do or what the functionality of it is. I don't know. I'm with
you. Almost seems like, you're playing with taffy or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know why having it rise up to your hands would make a difference.
Yeah.
I would rather rest my arms on something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure how to feel about Tilly suggesting Saru turn in Burnham. But she wasn't wrong. Wondering if we'll see fallout later. Burnham seems to realize what she did, but I'd love to see them at least have a conversation about it. And Tilly seems like someone who would feel the need to tell Burnham what she did. Ah, okay, so you're talking about a Tilly-Burnham conversation. Yeah, I would like to see that as well.
She probably will, and Michael will probably say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She would say, you did what you had to, or you were right. Yeah.
All right. Finally, our final listener, hold your horses. Carol from Washington, D.C. says, doesn't Book have magical healing powers? Couldn't he heal his blue friend or at least his own neck? I don't know that he has magical healing powers. He has magical growing powers.
Well, he has something. And, you know, that, again, is a little bit of an inconsistency. And we haven't seen that addressed either. How he has that, is that some kind of alien thing? We believe it is. So we don't know. And there was that indication that it seemed like Booker wasn't human or wasn't fully human. And that it is hinted at, I think, in the first episode, but at the same time, not addressed. So, or maybe it wasn't the first episode. Maybe it was the third episode. Yeah. When Booker shows up. So we'll see.
Yep. We'll see. All right. Finally, she says, and Tilly is not a cat person. I find that highly unlikely. I agree. She handled that cat like a pro. Unlike Book, who did not.
Yeah.
David Ajala looked so awkward holding that cat, but Tilly did not. Yeah. she looked like she had been handling cats her whole life, which is why I was like, man. And she, I mean, but the thing is, So, what's her name? Mary Wiseman?
Yeah.
Made it seem like she was awkward when she was handling the cat. But honestly, a cat person can tell another cat person.
Yeah.
You can try and act awkward while you're holding a cat, but you still know what you're doing. I don't know. Which is why I'm like, I could look at David Ajala holding that cat and think to myself, that man has never held a cat before in his life.
Yeah.
Whereas Mary Wiseman, I'm like, she's held a cat a time or two. I don't know. I might be awkward too, because the cat that I've been holding the most recently is only 4 pounds. So it might be a little bit different holding a cat that weighs significantly more.
Yeah. All right, so what do you have for your Hold Your Horses?
All right. My first one is Rin being a pariah in their little world made zero sense to me. It's not like he betrayed them. He was caught. There's a difference. So I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all. I was like, man, those people are being spiteful just for the sake of being spiteful. That's what I thought anyway. I was like, come on. Give the guy a break. He tried. Maybe they're just mad because he got their hopes up or something. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't like it. I was like, what they explained about it and the way that those people were acting, they didn't make sense together.
The fact that Rin being a pariah, I don't know. Maybe it just it reminds me of the way that they treated Burnham in season one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was guilty of...
Like, she started the war. She didn't start the war.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't her fault. I mean, she did some things that caused some things to happen, but it wasn't her fault. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel the same way. I'm like, come on, people. Don't be dumb.
Yeah. Felt bad for the guy, though.
I did, too. Like, you lost his antennae.
Yeah. Which... Apparently what do those back. Antenna... What do they give... Andorians anyway, like what
balance? That's what the Reddit balance? Room said.
Okay.
And balance, they grow back.
The force?
No.
And they grow back. Well, how come his didn't grow back?
Well, it said given time they grow back. So apparently it hasn't been enough time.
Okay.
At least
they just look like stubs.
Yeah. Maybe they have grown a little bit. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's what the Reddit room said. There's a little trivia question about what do the antenna do on the Andorians? What's their purpose? And I thought for sure it was like extra hearing, but nope, apparently it's balance. So there you go.
Anything else?
Yes. I didn't understand how some of the ships in the shipyard were not completely exploded. Why didn't they explode from the burn? Like, what happened there? Because in the burn scenes that we've seen, they all went kaboom. But there were some that were still intact.
I think some ships that, didn't have dilithium would have stayed intact. So maybe they were so old, and certainly like that one cargo ship that, or not cargo ship, but it was one that looked like what I remember the Hiawatha looking like, mm-hmm. like this big, long, kind of ugly looking ship. That was the one that crashed in. And there was another Federation starship, which, by the way, why are all these ships looking like Starfleet ships? That doesn't make sense. But that they were so old that they were already kind of salvage ships at that point. So
maybe.
Yeah.
But didn't all ships have dilithium?
Pre-burn? All ships had dilithium, but I'm saying that these ships were already decommissioned. Mm. So they were already like stripped of their dilithium, I'm thinking.
Mm.
So.
All right.
That's my thought. Anything else?
Yes. Okay, Stamets. She's not a tween. She's a teen. Duh.
True.
A tween is like 11, 12.
Yeah.
A teen is any age that ends in teen, like 16. And finally, my final hold your horses is the free use of number one is off-putting to me. Because I had always thought that was just a nickname that Captain Picard used, not an official term. Like, the official term is your first officer. But people have been throwing number one around ever since number one showed up on the Enterprise. I'm like, I don't know. I've never heard that before or since TNG until now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean.
But now it's a thing. Now everyone's number one. And,
I don't like
they
it.
They should. Even Picard called this dog number one. So, you know.
Yeah, but anyway, I just don't like it. Captain Picard uses it, and that's fine. That was a personal affectation, but I didn't hear Sisko using it. I didn't hear.
No.
Janeway
didn't.
Janeway using it. I didn't hear Archer using it. Somehow, this character shows up on Enterprise, whose name is Una.
Well, she was the original number one. So
right, because her name was Una. Yeah. So she said, just call me number one. And she was number one. Well, she was the first officer. And so whatever. But suddenly, it's a thing. I don't like it. Like I said, the free use of it, I find irritating.
Yeah. I only had one, hold your horses, because I moved one up. But when the Andorian gets shot, like he kind of steps in the way of that one shot for that was, you know, being headed for Book. So he gets shot with that round gun. In the past, whenever those shots had occurred, they were just vaporized. So why didn't that happen to him? Why didn't that happen to Rin? He just took the shot in the chest and didn't get vaporized. Because we also see a bunch of people get shot and vaporized throughout that scene, but not him, not that one time.
Did they? I didn't see that many people get vaporized. The only people I saw get vaporized were people who were getting shot by Book's ship.
Yeah, yeah. So
I would say different settings because it doesn't make sense to kill off your workers.
True, true.
But if you're anyway, security handling, you know, security for you, I mean, I guess you wouldn't want to kill off all your patrons, but if they're stealing, they're not really a patron. They're kind of stealing. I don't know. That's what I would say. Just a different setting. And probably the first time around, all we saw was the vaporized setting.
Maybe. Beyond that, I can't think of anything else. So, because we've kind of hinted around various hold your horses all episodes so far. So let's move on to voicemails and feedback and whatnot and open hailing frequencies again. All right. So our first voicemail, we have just two this time, but it's from Jeff X-Force 11.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my feedback about Scavengers. I thought this was an interesting episode, I enjoyed getting to delve a little more in Georgiou's what seems to be PTSD, a flashback that she's re-experiencing. And it's going to be interesting to kind of dig into that. I think it's very cool the way that they are using technology and retrofitting the Discovery, adding things that feel new in the midst of the normal ship. I love the idea of the combination communicator, pad, tricorder, and personal transporter built into the Delta badge. But I'm still not sold on the design. I don't know. I just haven't seen it close enough up yet, but I'm not sold on it. I'm just a fan of the classic Delta design. So we'll see where that goes. But I thought it was an interesting episode and looking forward to next week. All right. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11, for your voicemail. Good to hear from you yet again. I want to agree with you about the badge.
Me too.
I don't know if I love the design of it.
I don't really.
I find it's hard to see. Like, you can't really see much detail on it. And the one thing I'm finding very frustrating, and quite honestly, I didn't think that this was going to be this way, because we see them show up pretty well in the opening credits. The pips are hard to see. I can't see them at all on that badge. And it's small, so they would be hard to see anyway. But it's there's not enough color difference in the badge to make up what is showing the pips. So, and you can't even really see Starfleet all that well. So I think that badge needs a redesign, a version 1.1 or 2 of that badge, because I don't love it.
Yeah, they talked about the badge a little bit on the Ready Room, and they seemed pretty proud of it, because they were all like handcrafted. And I just kind of thought, I wish you had handcrafted something different.
Yeah, I have to go back. And I must have missed some things in the Ready Room, because I did not see that. So I think I fell asleep during watching the Ready Room last night. So, because we had recorded when we were supposed to record, I wouldn't have seen it at all, but I have seen some of it, but obviously not all of it. Because you've mentioned a couple of things. I'm like, I don't remember seeing that. So, Giorgio's PTSD flashback. I said this, it seems like this is the season of PTSD. We're getting a lot of it from a lot of different characters. And some are, you know, like Culber, have kind of already worked through their PTSD, and others like Detmer and Giorgio and even Saru, I guess, have not. So
I think it's more than just PTSD for her, though. I mean, not necessarily more, but it's like maybe a delayed reaction.
Yeah.
Suppressed memories kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do like all of the things that the badge gives you. You know, that holo pad, for one thing, is quite cool. I would love to have something that would just pop up and
yeah. Agreed.
Let me edit episodes wherever I am. That would be great.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do, just so you guys know, I do my editing at a desktop, which was great and gave me a lot more power, but it also means that I sit at one place and I can't really do everything that I used to do from various places. So I don't know, may change that at some point, but Not right now. Need money for other stuff. Yeah, that's all I had to say about Jeffs.
Yep.
All right. So our second voicemail, and this is version two of the voicemail. Fred gave me a version of the voicemail and then gave me another version of the voicemail with a little more in it. So this is version two. So anyway, Fred, here you go.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and possibly Elsie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some short feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 6. Very nice episode. I really liked that Book is back. I wonder how long he will stay around. I think he will pop up now and then, just not every episode. I don't know if I like it that he is back too much in the sense of being romantically involved with Burnham. When Linus popped up in that elevator, I thought, okay, now it's over. And I really wondered actually if this was the very first time they kissed, or that in that 1 year they spent together, they already had something going on. On the other hand, if it has to happen, then it is perhaps better like this.
When the interruption of Linus would have led to not going on with the possible kiss, it could have been stretched out for more than a few episodes, and I think then it's better like this. So I'm happy they did go on and they didn't stretch it. I liked the episode actually quite a lot, but what I thought was quite misplaced was the scene with Tilly and Grudge. Georgiou and Michael are traveling towards this planet where Book is, and suddenly we get a cat scene in between, which says nothing different than Michael is missing, and that's it. And furthermore, it's a scene for cat lovers or something like that. One of the strongest scenes is the scene with Culber and Stamets in bed, where he reflects on his discussion with Idira, so that they both deal with somebody they love that died but is still there. Really, really nice connection. No idea what the memory-like flashes Georgiou has mean, but it looks a little bit like an embryo, or she lost an embryo, or had a miscarriage, or something like that. Big question is why she gets this now and here.
Burnham really has problems with the Starfleet straitjacket, and when she takes off her comm badge at the end, I really wonder if she is considering just to leave Starfleet and go with Book, pursuing her own plans to find out what happened in the burn.
That's all for now.
Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you so much, Fred, for your voicemail. Good to hear from you, and good to get that version two. So, anyway, wrote some notes while I was listening to your voicemail here. Book popping up, but you're not so plussed on the Book Burnham relationship. I like their relationship. I think their chemistry is great. So while I don't think you need it, I think it works for them. So, you know, it worked for me. But I think it was the first time. I think that was the moment.
First kiss too.
Yeah. I don't think it would have worked if it had been something they had done in the past. It would have lost a lot of the meaning there. So,
mm-hmm.
So like you, though, I am also happy that they didn't stretch this, because it could have led to, was thinking of Mulder and Scully, how they kind of, you know, almost kiss and then, you know, nothing happens for half a season, and then they almost kiss again, and then
mm-hmm.
So it could have drawn it on, and I think it was good that it didn't, because if I think it needs to advance. So, and based on your comments there, you are definitely not a cat lover, are you? I do kind of understand or agree with the misplacement. I'm still confused as to whether or not I thought I understood it. Did Tilly and Burnham still, were they still roommates? I thought that they weren't anymore, but I now get the distinct impression that they are. So I don't know what to...
I don't know why they would be.
It makes no sense.
It does, because if you think about it, they were roommates at the end of season two, and there hasn't been enough time for them to, weren't they? There hasn't been enough time for them to move Michael out, maybe. I mean, I guess they could have since she became first officer, but on the other hand, maybe there hasn't been time to do it. Or maybe Michael put Grudge in Tilly's room to take care of Grudge while I'm gone. But then it did kind of, they did sort of imply that they were sharing quarters, because why would Saru ask her where Michael was if they weren't sharing quarters? Why would she know?
All I can say is I want a programmable matter litter box.
Yes.
That would make life so much easier.
No doubt.
Yeah. I agree with you on Adira and Stamets. So I think that those moments were good. And I think that it's interesting. I still don't really know where the whole Gray thing goes. Why he's there. I like that they're interacting with him, you know, sort of like with an intermediary, but I don't understand why he's there. It's not something we've ever seen before or had explained before with Trill. So, and even this is discussed in the episodes, like, you know, this is not something that is normal. So I don't know. Although I'm kind of surprised, like, how does Stamets know all that much about Trill anyway? Because,
Well, maybe from the sphere data.
Maybe he read up on it.
He seems like the kind of person who would just browse the sphere data. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree.
But maybe it's a result of Trill human joining. I don't know.
Maybe. Did you get the impression that what we saw there was Giorgio having a miscarriage?
No, someone got injured.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there was multiple flashbacks. I mean, I'd have to go back and
freeze frame
watch those flashbacks a little closer and see if there's like multiple flashbacks or if she's just flashing back to one thing. But what I thought I saw was a younger Giorgio losing a son. So, you know, but we'll see.
Well, the Chinese word sen means forest.
Okay.
So it's possible that could have been someone's name. At least this is what Google is telling me. So... it's possible that I don't think she would have been saying son, personally. I think she, if the subtitles said sen, then she was probably saying sen, which means forest in Chinese, which could be someone's name.
Yeah. Just taking a look here to see if I can see anything. I see a knife and I see lots of blood. I did get a little bit of a glimpse of something, but I didn't see that. So. Have to go back and take a look at it more.
It might be the wrong pronunciation.
Yeah, could be.
But I didn't hear what she said, honestly. I couldn't really understand her. Yeah. But it could be forest. Or it could just be a shortened version of someone's name. I don't know Chinese or Mandarin, so I have no idea.
I hope that Burnham doesn't leave Starfleet, as I said. So.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to mention?
No.
All right.
We got a short little blurb from Edwin from Arizona. He said, I gasped when the blue guy got shot. Didn't see that coming. And then Comic Geek Kev says, so glad to see some action again. And another great episode. A little movement towards solving the burn mystery. Some nice character stuff with Adira and Stamets reuniting with Book and Grudge. By the way, do we know if Grudge is actually a regular cat? Maybe a Flurkin? I thought Book wasn't human. Why would he have a cat? I mean, yes, there could be an interesting story there, but if so, I'd like to hear it. Well, we know that Grudge is a queen, so.
Yeah, we don't know exactly queen of Catia or
queen of Book's world, as all cat owners know.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we have Ken from Chicago, who says, at Star Trek CBS, at Ethan G. Peck forgot to show the hashtag Star Trek Discovery crew how to hold a cat. Instead of holding the cat lying on its back like a baby, hashtag Spock has one arm beneath the cat for its feet to rest on, for it to rest its feet on. This makes the cat feel secure. Then we have a cat emoji, a thumbs up emoji, and a Spock emoji.
Yeah, and there is an old GIF that he has in the tweet of Spock, Leonard Nimoy Spock, holding a cat. So I think that's from the old episode of Assignment Earth. I think it's from Assignment Earth. Anyway, so.
Well, we don't know how Ethan G. Peck does with cats. And yeah. Leonard Nimoy is dead, so he won't be much help. But Brent Spiner seemed to do pretty okay with Spot. So.
Felis Catis.
But even though they did a bait and switch Spot, long hair, then short hair. Still a ginger tabby, but completely different cat. And they thought no one would notice. I noticed. Maybe I didn't notice at the time I was watching the show, but I noticed when I did my rewatch.
Yep.
Anyway. Yeah, like I said, I think Mary Wiseman is definitely a cat person based on how she was acting in her mishandling of the cat versus how David Ajala, who was supposed to be playing a cat person, had no idea how to hold the cat. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've got a long set of notes from Mike from Arizona. He says, Michael. Hopefully you got yourself a good man in Book and who's not a surgically altered Romulan spy with delusions of conquest, because that kind of happened before. Well, not a Romulan, but yeah. On a different note, I'm very curious about her emotional state. Another viewer submitted a comment 2 podcast episodes ago about her crying every episode. I don't have a problem with that because I think it is representative of a deeper story arc for her character. She spent a good portion of her life acting Vulcan, and ever since the end of season 2, she has been slowly evidencing more comfort with her emotion. I think the increased emotional vulnerability and comfort with herself, along with an increasing sense of being confined, may lead her to leave Discovery, possibly Starfleet altogether. I seriously wonder if she and Philippa will be both joining or at least collaborating with Section 31. Hear me out. Michael is showing that she is not reintegrating well to Starfleet's regulations and protocol. She's used to having a lot of room to operate, something Section 31 would likely better afford her than Starfleet is willing. I think her investigations into the burn will lead her to Section 31 and or some other secret organization. This is very interesting that you're bringing this up, because I kind of hinted that something like that could be the case. And I said I didn't want to see that. But I mean, again, I was wondering before if the reason why we had never heard any details about this Section 31 show is because it's going to be in the 32nd century. Or wouldn't that be interesting if it was both Michelle Yeoh and Sinequa that move over to the Section 31 show. I don't know what to think of that, but it'd be kind of interesting to have her kind of switch shows like that, almost like, you know, Next Gen and Picard, I guess, in a way. But yeah, I guess I could see that. But anyway, he continues, he says, addressing to me, "Brian, I believe you shared that it didn't feel realistic that after a year of not serving in Starfleet that she would have difficulty reintegrating. Did I say that? Maybe I thought, I'll just stop you there. Maybe I said, no, I don't think, maybe I did, but that's not what I meant. What I meant was that, oh, maybe I did say that. I was thinking about it. Sorry. I'm just thinking about this on the fly. I didn't get a chance to read this before reading it. So I may have said that. I think maybe I was basing that at the time on what we had seen her do. And clearly now I think that the way she is behaving, she is definitely having issues with it. So I would say I understand it now where I didn't before. But I think what I maybe said was it would have made sense to me had more time passed, like maybe 2 years or something. A year didn't seem like enough time. Maybe that's what I was getting at. That seems to ring a bell to me. So along those lines, he says, "I perceive it differently. First, we have to consider our perspective as viewers, which is that we expected Discovery and Michael to reconnect. So a year doesn't seem like a big deal. That anticipation prevents us from considering what someone who doesn't have that anticipation would be like." That's interesting. Okay. "Second, it's not the actual chronology that matters. It's our sense of it. She had to go on with her life knowing that it might be 1,000 years before Discovery shows up. As she told Tilly, she had to let them go. When you do that, you are changed, and you need to fill that void with something meaningful, or you're going to fall into despair. Figuring out the cause of the burn is what has given her life meaning. She is unable to stop herself from investigating it. And I believe Starfleet's missions are becoming an impediment to her personal mission, determining the cause of the burn. So I think she will leave Discovery at some point. Now, she might not join Section 31 permanently, but I think she might on a temporary basis." Well, I don't know. We'll see.
So
we'll see.
When I feel like it wasn't this season that people complained about her crying all the time. Was that this season and I just missed those? That was in the episodes I missed?
I don't remember.
Because I remember people used to complain about her crying a lot a couple of seasons ago. And I threw that down right out the window because she wasn't crying a lot. She cried sometimes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like she cried
every episode.
I don't know. I
haven't been crying so much.
I don't remember that. But
yeah,
I did miss two episodes.
I don't know. I can't recall anything specific, but you know. And then you mentioned something about next week's episode, so I've moved that down to later, you know, near the end, so we won't talk about that now. But then he says, "Thanks for the opportunity. I continue to love the podcast and look forward to the critical analysis." Well, thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Your feedback is appreciated. Okay, so that is it for our feedback for this week. Let's move on to our notes. And just, you know, worth saying that we mentioned this before. Or actually, I didn't mention it before. I just ripped it out completely. So, you know, in the past, we were doing this Spot the 47 / whatchamacallit references. We're not going to do that anymore. We just decided that it, like, especially with last week, it was so long. And it felt like I was just reading the stuff. So Ruthie made a good point, and we're just not going to do it anymore. So now it's our notes. So what do you have, Ruthie?
I think the most things I have or want to talk about are related to Michael and Philippa. I really like their relationship. It's so complicated. It's my favorite on the show.
Yeah.
Whenever Philippa starts to feel vulnerable, she lashes out.
I've noticed this too.
Which is exactly what she did when Michael offered her help. She is so stuck in her mindset, she doesn't know how to accept help. And as she said, I wouldn't know what to ask for, basically. But in my opinion, I feel like she should have told her about her compromised state, because that compromises Michael as well. It puts her in a position of having to discover this situation at the time that she might need her to be, you know, in a clutch, that she would need her to react a certain way, and she doesn't or can't or what have you. And so I understand what she's saying when she says, I wouldn't know what kind of help to ask for. But at the same time, when you're going off on a mission with someone and you're basically agreeing to a limited partnership, it's not necessarily partners in crime forever, but it is a limited partnership. We're going to do this thing, so we're in this together. Michael deserved to know about her situation. I think it's going to take a while for Giorgio to really get to the point where she can, I guess, open up about things that are happening to her without fear of rejection.
Yeah. And it is using the same kind of trope that we saw in season one of Discovery, where she is kind of like saying to Burnham, don't tell anyone, where that's exactly what Tyler did. So, you know, I'm wondering if I don't think we're going to see the same kind of thing happen, whereas, you know, she comes out as a Klingon.
Right.
But it seems to suggest that we're going to get another kind of outburst that will be coming up, you know, at the most inopportune time, and probably at a time when people are going to ask her, why didn't you say anything, kind of thing. So, but I don't know. It's a similar kind of trope that made me think of that when she said that to Burnham, you know, don't tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Anything else?
Not really. Honestly, just, I also want to know about the flashbacks and why they're so debilitating. That's kind of why it makes me think that it's something that guy Kravitz, I guess is his name, it's something that guy did. And I don't think whether it's that he, I don't think he necessarily did something to her physically. I think that he might have done something to her, like delved into her psyche or something, I don't know, gotten into her memories or made her think about things, or just something that he did in their debrief that made her dredge up these old memories or something. I don't know. But I want to know why they're so debilitating to her. Like, why would it cause her to pass out?
Obviously, a repressed memory that is... I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Anything else?
I can't really think of anything.
A few things that I picked up on. In one of the initial scenes, when Saru is, with Vance, and they're basically going through the various captains, notice how none of them were there by hologram. They're all there physically, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When Saru, hears about the Emerald Chain, he says to Vance, the Andorian Orion Syndicate? And Vance responds with, in this part of the quadrant, yes. So does that mean that there are other others that are involved with this, that it's not just the Andorians and Orions, there's some other an anti-Federation kind of thing? So of course we also met here the Vidraish, which we don't know really, like, is there some other group besides the Federation that is like the Neo Federation or something like that, the Vidraish? I don't know, but interesting. I don't have it in my notes, but I mentioned the whole thing about the 1031A. I am very confused now because of Calypso, because that ship in Calypso was not the 1031A. That was the 1031. So what does this mean?
I don't know.
It's, yeah, alternate timeline.
That's what I was going to say, alternate timeline.
Makes me wonder. We get a few infuses of Deep Space Nine in this episode, specifically or Bajor. We hear about book is going to the Bajoran exchange, so they have an exchange. Seems like all these different planets, all these important planets have some kind of exchange, some kind of single exchange, which is kind of weird. Because, there are like trillions of people, so why would there only be a single exchange? Anyway, we also get self-stealing. I'm going to leave that in because it's funny. Self-sealing stem bolts from the late 24th century, which is something that I believe is one of the things that Nog and Jake are like trading with to, get their latinum in that one episode. So anyway, but self-sealing stem bolts, and it's late 24th century too. So the other thing about Bajorans, we see that poor Bajoran guy get, his head taken off going against that perimeter. Is that, I don't remember seeing Bajorans with Asian features before. So we probably have seen it, but I don't remember of any. Of course, we've seen that kind of thing with other species, but I just couldn't think of any Asian Bajorans, for lack of a better and probably bad way of saying it.
I would say similarly with the Trill. I'm not sure exactly his ethnicity, but seems sort of Pacific Islander.
Sure.
So just kind of chalk it up to there are lots of different people on a planet.
Yep. And I guess it's difficult to show different races in, say, an Andorian or even an Orion. Well, I don't know. I could kind of see it more in an Orion, but an Andorian where it's all blue. How much would it show up anyway? And then from TNG, we get the Baryon sweep. So that was also something that reminded me of past episodes. So in other words, we got some references. I put it in my notes instead of making a whole section of it, and was stuff that I found and not reading from an article. But I will put the article in the Facebook group just in case you're still interested about it. The last point is something that I alluded to earlier on when I looked up the character of Rin in Memory Alpha. Rin is played by Noah, I don't know if I'm going to get his last name correct, Noah Averbach or Averbach Katz. And that is the husband of Mary Wiseman.
Huh.
So, I knew he was an actor, but I did not know that he had been cast in Discovery. So that's cool. Okay, so that's it for our notes. So let's move on and make our shipwide announcements. The Ready Room, which I already said I didn't get to see all of. It seems like you did, Ruthie, so maybe you have more to say. Featured lead creature designer Neville Page. And one thing I did get to hear is that he actually does consult with Michael Westmore quite a lot. So I thought that was great. In fact, the way he said it is that it would be, I think he said it would be kind of irresponsible for him not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And
basically saying that you could create anything you want, but if it's not practical or usable, then you've wasted your time.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I thought that it was great. I mean, obviously he realizes that Michael Westmore had so much to do with the look of the, you know, 80s and 90s and 2000s Star Trek. And he's for Neville Page not to, you know, tap that resource and not, you know, treat him for the legend that he is, you know, would not be right. So thanks again to Wes Huntington for collecting most of these stories. There's one that I added, but Anson Mount is joining the Medi board of directors. So their mission is to send transmissions out into the universe and see who responds. So I guess there is a passive SETI and there is an active SETI. So Medi is part of the group that is active SETI. So instead of like just listening for transmissions that are out there to find intelligent life, they're actually sending transmissions out into the universe and see who responds. So there was a hint on Anson Mount's Twitter earlier this week that he had a big announcement coming up, and this was his big announcement. So I think it's cool. All three currently released Star Trek series that were in 2020, Picard, Lower Decks, and Discovery, have been nominated for Critics' Choice Super Awards. Lower Decks has three nominations. Discovery has two, and Picard has one. Interesting. So I have seen this one before. I don't know if you've seen it, but Comini is starring in a group of commercials for Aldi grocery stores as Santa. Now, I don't know if those are here in the US, but I know that they're being played in like the UK and Ireland. So, but yeah, he's Santa Claus in them. So Sir Patrick Stewart and Rod Roddenberry have been honored with Young Artist Academy Awards. So that's cool. This was the article that I just added after seeing it. Herb Solo, who was a longtime TV executive who actually pitched the Star Trek series, the original, to NBC while he was working at Desilu Studios. And, you know, he's also involved with Mission Impossible and Mannix. He died on Thursday, and he was 89. So he also wrote several books on the Star Trek series, including Inside Star Trek, The Real Story, and the Star Trek Sketchbook. So anyway, sorry to hear of his passing, but he had a long career with, you know, the TV industry. So as far as ratings this week, CBS is, of course, playing season one episodes of Discovery. And this week, it was season one, episode seven, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which is one of my favorite episodes from season one.
Me too.
It got a 0.2 in the 18 to 49 with 1.850 million viewers. That is slightly down with last week's 0.3 and 1.2 1.975 million. So the trend, though, is that the ratings have been going up. So, and speaking of that, as far as the Parrot Analytics, Discovery is actually up two spots this week, from number 5 to number 3 in the digital originals. So last week it was at 34.3 times the average show, and it went up to 35.7 average. So it is now number 3 behind The Mandalorian and Stranger Things for average demand expression. So it's like just outside of the top 10 of total shows. So, but it's very cool. It's good to see that the numbers are going up. That's it for our news. So Ruthie, why don't you take us out and tell people how to submit their theories and feedback to us.
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can also call us at 216-232-6146, or you can email us, StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com, or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcast. And next week, in case you are international, we have a holiday here in the States. So we're extending the deadline for our feedback for season 3, episode 7 of Discovery. And that deadline will be Saturday, November 28th, 2020 at 7 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Central, 1200 UTC. So you have a little bit of extra time because we are probably not going to be recording until Saturday morning next week as well. So yes. Extra time. Yay.
Yes. So yeah, you'll have a little more time to get things in, but please, if you can, don't wait until the last minute to get the feedback in, because then we have to scramble. So yes, get your feedback in. You have a little more time. Just, keep that in mind. So our Twitter and Instagram, which I didn't post the last couple of weeks on Instagram, so I need to do that. I'll go ahead and do that after we're done. Star Trek TTM. And for that matter, I didn't post the episode this week on Twitter either. Sorry, but I'll take care of both things. So a great way to support us is to share those posts when I actually post them on Twitter and Facebook. The ones on Facebook, go to facebook.com/talkthroughmedia, which is the Facebook page for the Talk Through Media Network. Those go there. They can be shared. They then get shared to the Facebook group. So anyway, help share when you see us post. And I still haven't done anything with the TikTok stuff yet. So you can subscribe on there, but Brian Milosh, but I'm just so far behind right now. I don't think I'm going to get back to that anytime soon. Subscribe to us in whatever podcast client that you choose. If you're in Apple Podcasts, you can help us out as well by giving us a rating or review. It's been a while since we've gotten anything on any of the platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podchaser.com, all of those. But you could help us out. You know, if you can't be a Patreon supporter, which we're about to talk to in another way, help support us by sharing and giving us a nice positive 5-star review. That would help. But as far as Patreon, we were going to try to do a Patreon this week, but given our challenges, I don't think we're going to be able to, and certainly not going to be able to next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. Sorry about that, Patreon people. So we'll hopefully do one in a couple of weeks. So, but I'm not going to even try to do one in the next week or so. So we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. All of our new episodes come out first on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to smash that subscribe button and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos, because the videos go out first before the podcast does. It's just part of our production process. Everything that Talk Through Media does can be found on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which also contains, in addition to Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Lower Decks, also has the Rebinged Deep Space Nine podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through, and Let's Talk Through. So the next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast will be covering Season 3, Episode 7, titled The Very Interesting Title of Unification 3, written by Kirsten Beyer and directed by, we don't know, we don't have a description, but we do have in the preview, it shows Vulcans, which I guess you could understand because the Unification 1 and 2 back from TNG days had to do with Vulcans and Romulans. So anyway, Mike from Arizona had one comment. He says, I wonder if we might see the Bashar this season after Michael reconnects with Vulcan. The Bashar.
Don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.